going on down there?
Blip, blip, bloop, bleep, ladies and gentlemen. This is Vangelis with WTF at TFW. It's Supplemental 21, Seth Pads Unplugged. And I'm here with Seth Buzzard.
Hi.
Hello! Hi. You might know him from Game Pads Unplugged.
And also from this podcast feed.
Yes, that too. And this is a video gamey supplemental because Seth got to go somewhere special the other day and has things to tell us.
Right, so TFW got an invitation to a like a press demo for Transformers War for Cybertron in San Francisco earlier this week, because this is the week of the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. So it was at the St. Regis Hotel, which is, man, that place is swanky. They would never have a BotCon there because that place looks ridiculously expensive. I felt like I was wearing a t-shirt and jeans and a jacket, and I was like, oh man, I should have a tie on just in the lobby.
That's an amazing culture divide that like toys would feel out of place there, but video games feel totally in place there.
Well, I mean, it's right downtown San Francisco near the financial district, yeah. And this was 5:30 or so when I got there. I got there kind of early, And that's about the time like all the business folk are getting out, and all the bars in that area just fill up with people dressed in suits and whatnot. So that lobby, the lobby bar was packed with people in suits.
Oh, man.
And so I felt really out of place and awkward, and like I need time to go faster so I could go upstairs. And but it was okay. Nobody gave me dirty looks that I noticed.
Who's that? It was jeans, t-shirt? What are you here for? Are you some kind of toy fan? I'm like, yeah, I'm actually here for the toy video game. Oh, go upstairs. So, yeah, also, I just wanted to add quickly that Seth and me have a special video game bond, and that he's caused me to lose about 23 hours of my life to Mass Effect so far. Just putting it out there.
So you're only halfway through?
I got Novara? Novaria? That's the last tagged place on my map. I gotta do that, and then I'm all done the entire galaxy. As it is thus far. I'm level 33 or 34. And I have 2 million credits, and I have nothing left to buy. So you were right. Anyway,
well, just keep accumulating credits, because if you have max out credits, you get a mad huge bonus when you import your character to ME2.
That's what I've been doing. I've just been, because I don't even need Omnigel anymore, so I've just been selling everything. It's mass. I go see. All right, is this number higher than anyone else's stuff? No. All right, sell another million. We are actually going to talk about War for Cybertron, and we're going to open up with a little bit of an audio interview bit that Seth recorded with Matt Teager at this meeting, I think after the presentation was done. It's just a short little clip, but it's kind of neat to hear some stuff from the rep himself. So,
well, he's not a rep, he's the game director.
The representative game director himself.
Of High Moon Studios.
Yes. And Seth, do you have any lead-in you want to do for this interview, or should I just spool it up?
Yeah, you might as well shoot. I mean, it's kind of short as it is, because we were shown parts of the game beforehand, and we had asked a bunch of questions. There was me and a guy from somewhere else. I don't know where that guy was from. He's some
the press
journalist. Yeah. He's like, I'm a big shot. Everyone move. He's like,
I'm late. Yeah. Wait for me.
I just showed up. Give me a cheeseburger. But there's no food. They did give me a bottle of water, though. They were very nice. So I didn't ask a lot of questions in the recording, because I had already asked before the recording. So I guess we'll kind of talk about some of that stuff after. But
It's mostly so you can hear Seth talking to Matt Teager about the game. You can hear some stuff from Matt Teager. You can hear the unrelenting enthusiasm in his voice, given that, as Seth let me know before we started recording, Matt had apparently been doing this whole thing over and over again since early that morning. And when this was recorded, it was, what, around sometime in the evening?
They had their first meeting to show the game at like 9 a.m., and I was the very last person that they were going to be talking to. Like, the other guy had done his little recording and left, and then I was doing my recording. So I was the end of the day, and we started recording, like, just after 7 p.m.
All right. Well, here it is!
Hey, everybody. Seth here, and I'm sitting down with Matt Teager, the game director of Transformers War for Cybertron. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great.
I'm going to hit you with some questions that are really popping up all over the fan community. So one of the first stories that got out about making this game is how you guys went to Hasbro. It wasn't, hey, we got a TV show, we got a movie, you guys work for cheap, why don't you do something? How did that go? Like, how did you approach Hasbro?
Activision had planned to do a non-movie-based Transformers game. And so they chose us to work on it based on the experiences that we had in third person, and we had used the Unreal Engine before, and it felt like a really good fit. We had done some other games that had let me put it another way. I think we've had some experience working with IPs and licenses. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good opportunity to put us together with Hasbro because we were big Transformers fans and big gamers. The first character that we ever worked on was Bumblebee. And I remember sitting across the table from Aaron and all the guys on Hasbro and sliding and being, you know, perspiring with nervousness as I slid, you know, one of the key characters in the Transformers game across the table and said, okay, I want to redesign him. Here we go. What do you think? And so that's how it all started.
Looking at past Transformer games, did you take a look at what had been done before and how you can improve on it, or did you just go in with your own game?
I think we did a lot of research, not just in video games, but comics and, you know, the movie and really the cartoon, right? I mean, there's so many. The lore is huge, right? The mythos is honestly rather intimidating. There's so much going on there. But we did spend a lot of time with the video game, and especially the most previous one. And what we decided to do was start with, you know, my philosophy is start with core gameplay fundamentals. And then, once you have that working, then you add Transformers to that. Instead of kind of the other way around, and maybe it's a subtle distinction, but I think it's a pretty important one, because what you have to do is make controls that feel right and are comfortable to people. So they can just slide in and be using Transform as a combat strategy that becomes very natural the way that they play. And you can't give them anything that feels like it's not quite working out. And, you know, I've read the forum posts. I know what people feel about the last set of controls. And so that's something that we wanted to make sure that we got right. And so we had to get great third person and then figure out a way to put transformation within that felt good and seamless and tight.
Cool. So in the trailers that we've seen so far, we've seen some big guys. We've seen Omega Supreme. We've seen Triptychon. Did we get a look at any other of the massive characters, or do you pretty much hold it there?
Those are the two colossal characters. Although there are some other, what I would call big fights. You know, you're going to fight against guys who have names, right? But, you know, in a game, you have to make tough choices about how many characters you can create and do justice to. And instead of going wide, we decided to go really deep and spend a lot of time making sure those guys were done right.
So naturally, for a video game, you can't just limit yourself to the roster of characters that everybody knows. Otherwise, you're going to have a very small cast, and you can't plow through a level killing off all the main characters. So you have sort of generic drones. How much variety are we going to see amongst the drones? And is there any sort of explanation as to why there's like a whole bunch of just dudes that are kind of purple, and then these other guys are multiple colors?
We spend, there are a number of guys that we fight against. Some big, some small, some have shields, some don't. You know, some shoot rockets, other ones have, machine guns. Some are planes, some are cars. There's a wide variety of characters that you're going to get to interact with. As far as, you know, what fills the ranks of the Decepticon army and the Autobot army, We worked to create as many color variations as we could to give those guys as much individuality as we could. Because, you know, Transformers as a property is not about nameless guys. They all technically are named guys. They all technically have, you know, history. But, you know, you have to make some tough choices, right? So what we did is we created Decepticon soldiers of a variety and Autobot soldiers of a variety. So I guess the original question was kind of about, you know, how do we explain all that? I guess we can't, right? In the sense that you can't kind of give every single character, because you wade through thousands of them, all a backstory and a history.
Any plans for a DLC in the future?
We haven't released yet what our DLC plan is, but it is something that we're going to be committing to. And, you know, without saying too much, you know, I think you can make some pretty obvious guesses as to what kind of things would make good DLC for us.
You were a Transformer fan growing up. Can you tell us a little bit about your own personal history with Transformers? Maybe what the first toy you got was, favorite character, anything like that?
My favorite character is a tough one, because I have favorites, lots of them. You know, my fandom based on Transformers is mostly focused on the G1 cartoons. In fact, just this last weekend, I was sharing them with my kids again. You know, we're kind of watching through again. I have several young kids, and they all really enjoy it. They still hold up as something really enjoyable and fun. Favorite characters for me, Starscream's really high up there. I've always liked Starscream. Megatron, I've always really enjoyed. I guess I'm more of a Decepticon than an Autobot. And I guess at the top would be Starscream. I had a lot of Starscream.
I guess we'll wrap it up. Well, I was doing a little bit of research on getting ready for coming up here today. I've seen a few people commenting that, just based on early stuff that they've seen, that, and this might be a little embarrassing, I don't know how it's going to go, but some people are saying that this War for Cybertron could be the surprise hit game of the year, the Batman Arkham Asylum of 2010. Do you get nervous at that idea?
that is intimidating, right? You know, boy, that'd be great. I'm not going to necessarily run away from that. It's really nice to be, you know, uttered in the same breath as Batman, which was a phenomenal game, right? It was really is resetting, I think, people's expectations of what a licensed game can be. And I'm very happy to be coming, you know, along the ride with that. You know, I am putting as much love and passion into Transformers War for Cybertron as I can. I think that we are getting some of that press because we're grounded in solid, good gameplay fundamentals. Batman's a great example of make a great game and then make sure the license is contributing to how the quality of the game, not the other way around. I don't know the guys that worked on that game, but playing through it and having really enjoyed it, I get the sense that that's the same tack that they took, is figure out the core fundamentals of what's cool and then apply the Batman style to that. And I think they were extraordinarily successful. We pattern a lot of our thinking in the same way. So if people are looking for that, you know, I hope that I give that to them. I think that, you know, when we started, the goal was not to be the best Transformers game ever. It was to be a great game that was a Transformers game. I really desperately hope that we are the highest rated Transformers game ever, and I hope that we are the sleeper hit that comes out of nowhere and destroys people's expectations, and we start to live in this world where licensed games don't have to be lousy, they can be fantastic. And that's what I want to be a part of.
Okay, cool. Well, that was Matt Tiger, game director of Transformers War for Cybertron. And thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So something I want to add after you've hopefully listened to that is that there is a lot more that was gleaned from Mr. Tiger by Seth, and you can check that out in a front page post called TFW 2005 War for Cybertron Gameplay Thoughts and Interview. Please read through it, because Seth wrote it in a pretty nice point form manner, and he's been very graciously sitting in the thread answering questions that he can answer as well, even if they are questions that he basically already answered in his written point form thoughts and interview. That aside, though...
Well, something to keep in mind with that is what I wrote is I only wrote about what I saw or was told or was said. I didn't add in anything from other interviews, add in anything from what we've seen in trailers, because there's been... There's a an official picture of what is obviously Ironhide, but I did not see Ironhide myself during the demo, so I did not list Ironhide in the characters that I saw. So just because my list of characters is very short, that's not because those are the only characters in the game. Those are just the ones I saw during the demo.
Yeah, but Seth, is Jetfire in the game?
He's in the game.
What about Soundwave?
Soundwave turns into like a van.
That's kind of
like an outer space van.
Well, who's this guy? Oh no, wait, Megatron. If I hold it over the thumbnail, it says Onslaught. Never mind. I didn't even realize I could do that. Hey, that's Zeta Prime. Okay. Anyway, there's pictures and stuff in the interview. Check it out. But Seth, let's talk about some other stuff that you saw and experienced at this meeting. I want to know things that you might not have mentioned in your interview write up.
Okay, so you know Omega Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
You know he's pretty big.
Yeah.
He is friggin' huge in this game. So they were running the... I didn't get to play the game myself. It was on a dev kit, like a dev kit Xbox. So imagine an Xbox 360, but where the hard drive goes, there's a big fat block stuck to it. And it's a build of the game specifically for doing this demo. So I never saw full levels front to back. It was, okay, we're going to load up this section of the game and we're going to play this for 5 minutes. And then they would stop.
You mean the whole game wasn't done yet?
Well, not that they brought with them. So at one point they load up the Omega Supreme battle, which you see bits of in the various trailers and whatnot. And they had it rigged so they could take characters closer to Omega Supreme than you'll be able to get when you actually play the game. And so it's one of the Decepticon levels, obviously, because you're fighting Omega Supreme. And the way the game is set up is there's three characters in each level. And you choose which of the three you want to play. And then the computer controls the other two, unless you're online. And then your friends could come into your game and take control of either of the unused characters. And you could have up to three players co-op during the campaign.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Because they're really going for, really giving you the sense of this is a war that's going on. This is armies fighting. So you wouldn't just be one lone Autobot running out into the streets of Cybertron battling hundreds of Decepticons by yourself. You'd be in a squad. So that makes sense. But anyway, so back to Omega Supreme. So Omega Supreme's standing in the center of the level, and it's during dialogue. It's before the battle happens, and once they're able to go where you won't be able to go, like through invisible walls and whatnot. They were controlling Soundwave at the time. They had Soundwave run down to the very bottom of the level where Omega Supreme is standing, and they ran Soundwave right up to Omega Supreme's foot. Soundwave barely came up to Omega Supreme's ankle. So Omega Supreme is gigantic.
You'd say he's pretty supreme.
Yeah. And his voice really reminded me of how Omega Supreme sounded and talked in Transformers Animated.
Oh, cool.
So that was cool. And Soundwave's voice is all synthesizer, voicoder sounding, as you would suspect.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if, given the levels of self-awareness they've displayed, they would do something like not do Soundwave with a really computery voice.
Yeah, and when they started the level and it was time to pick the character, the way the selection was set up, as they switch from character to character and you see like their stats, there's a big picture of them in robot mode and then a small picture of them in vehicle mode. So they go to Breakdown, they go to Megatron, they go to Soundwave, and Matt's like, so who do you guys want to see? Who do you want us to control? And the other guy that was there was like, Soundwave. And Matt's like, oh, is that cool with you? To me asking if I was okay with it. I'm like, I'm super excited that I just saw what Soundwave's alt mode is. So, yeah, let's do Soundwave. Because Megatron looks dumb, but no, it's... and so that that's why they use Soundwave. He kind of looks like a van, which is weird. So, like, as we've heard before, there's, like, vehicle classes, like sports car and truck and jet and tank.
Yeah.
So it looks like Soundwave is a truck class.
Would you say that he kind of had the silhouette of the animated Soundwave alt mode?
No, more like a... more of a square utility fan sort of a shape.
Hmm.
But while they were playing the actual level, they never transformed him. So I only had that little picture in the corner to go by. And then Breakdown, his vehicle mode is kind of like a muscle car.
Mm-hmm.
But a Cybertronian muscle car, but still with like the big engine sticking up out of the hood. And
got alien
the grill
muscles.
Is all spiky. Yeah, like the grill is like more Mad Max style. And I thought he looked more like Lockdown than Breakdown. Except for the color scheme. He was mostly white.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask about the color scheme.
Yeah, I almost wanted to go, hey, make him black and green and rename him Lockdown because that's way cooler.
Then the dude you were there with would be like, who's Lockdown?
And I'd smack him in the face and say, shut up!
Lance goddamn Hendrickson is who Lockdown
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that's who.
You
wanted to know if Galvatron was in the game. Dum-dum. This is set before the cartoon. Galvatron didn't come till later. So of course he's not in the game. Stupid.
Bring along a Polaroid of your collection. Go like, you see this? These are my credentials. You got your little press pass? Look at this.
Hold up a Polaroid of Galvatron, like, flipping in his face, like, there's a Galvatron! Sucker, they didn't offer you a bottle of water, they gave me a bottle of water.
Speaking of the alt modes...
You should have been here on time.
Yeah, Mr. Late Boy. He's like, my credentials are that I get to be late. That's a really old joke now that I told before we started recording, I'm sorry. When you were mentioning the vehicle modes, the thing I found interesting was the bit about how the cars could kind of alternate between being hover cars or like folding their wheels down and becoming Land roving cars.
Yeah, so if you imagine the wheels tilting inward and then like where the hubcaps would be where like hover thrusters are thrusting, like that's how they look when you're sort of just not really moving fast, and you move around, but it makes the cars more nimble. So you can be in vehicle mode and just be sort of hovering around and shooting because the vehicles have different weapons than when you're in robot mode.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you want that vehicle gun, but you don't want to be driving really fast. You still want to like hide around that corner and slide out and get some shots off. You could do that as a vehicle and without it being a big hassle to try like back up and turn and back up again and do a 3-point turn to try to get your gun off.
Or trying to do that but with then the Mako. When, Sorry, that reminded me of the Mako levels I've been playing in Mass Effect. Trying to orient myself. I get it. You know, it's easier now that I've been playing it a bit, but go on anyway. You can flip the hover bits down and go all gritty.
Right, and then when you want to go fast and drive faster, like boost it out, then the wheels flip down and it looks like it controls more like you would expect when you're controlling a car or a truck or a tank.
I really like that aspect because that really adds to, like, it sounds to me like it would add a whole nother layer to the vehicle mode where it's not just this is my fast form, but it's like... Yeah. It sounds tactical. I'm curious if they worked in a similar deal on the other vehicle templates.
Well, we saw a little bit of a level with Starscream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if I saw Starscream like stopping in midair with vehicle form and like rotating. But Starscream, like, there were definite moments where they were boosting and going faster.
Yeah.
And like the wings and parts of Starscream would shift and change position based on how fast he was going.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's a lot of little movement on characters. Like, they were walking around as Optimus Prime a lot, and in his robot mode, two of the wheels are, like, flipped up onto his back.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, like, one of those wheels would sort of, like, lift up and then go back down to its position, and then there was, like, a piece beneath them, and those would kind of shift and move. So, like, parts of them are just always kind of adjusting, it looks like. So they're not just completely static forms.
Yeah. So it, like, it sounds like a lot of work went into both the modeling and the animation on them.
Right. Yeah, and the graphics are pretty nice. They use the Unreal Engine. And everything just looks more, like, compared to the last movie game, and especially compared to the first movie game, everything, the buildings of Cybertron to the character models themselves, it just looks like a lot more time was put into it.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't feel empty at all. It feels like there's some real weight. At least going by the screenshots and the trailers, it looked to me like everything had a real kind of weight or, like, oomphiness to it. Like, there was something inside that was solid on all the models and the visuals.
Yeah, they walked Prime out onto, like, a balcony to where they could shift the camera around and, like, look out over the cityscape of I think they were in Iacon,
mm-hmm.
was the city they were in, and just gleaming science fiction-y metal buildings. It looked really good.
That's awesome.
And then another thing that Matt was pointing out was, like, when you have to interact with a terminal to unlock a door, or when there's turrets around and you walk up to use the turret, they didn't want the robots just to walk up and, like, press a button or grab some handles.
Mm-hmm.
So they show Ratchet using a terminal to open a door, and when he walks up to the terminal starts transforming, and then Ratchet's arms change shape and his forearms plug into the terminal, and then another piece comes up and plugs into his chest, and then he's able to open the door. And then when they went to use some turrets, they walk Optimus over to a turret, and the turret starts opening up, and the characters more, like, fuse into the turret. Like, they mm-hmm. transform into the turret. Like, they combined with the turret to use the turret, which was, it's more interesting looking than just walking up and grab the handle, pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, or even just walking up, shifting to first-person view, and you don't even see how you're connected to it or something like that. Right. I do have a question about that. Granted, this was a demo, so it's really hard to make an appraisal already, but I really like the idea of all these, like, you know, these basically combination touches, like physical combination touches. Did they look to you like they'd run smoothly, or did they look like they might kind of bog down the pace of the gameplay at all after you've been at it for an hour or two?
Well, a couple of the battle scenes that they showed, like, do you mean will the game engine bog down, or?
Oh, no, I mean, like, if you're
your ability to care,
like yeah, if you're in a really long level, like I'm thinking of, what was that game, Wet, where every time you picked up a beer bottle, there'd be this full on cutscene of you, like, drinking the booze, kick flipping it over your head and shooting it or something like that, and then, like,
no, all these things happen really quickly.
Okay, so it's like you basically it wouldn't make you kind of start going like, I wish you could just open the door or something like that.
Yeah, well, with the thing with Ratchet, that was also when dialogue was happening. So imagine,
ooh, okay.
imagine in Gears of War, where you can still walk around, but your guy has his fingers up to his ear because he's talking on the radio.
Yeah,
and they kind of make you move slower. Like, it kind of looked like a situation like that. But when they were going up to the turrets, it was right in the middle of a battle, and it was like, run up to the turrets and And Matt was warning us all the way, like, okay, watch the turret, watch the turret. When he goes over the turret, watch it. Okay, you see what's happening? And then it's like, and he combines
it. So it's really fast. Like, it's about as fast as any other game where you'd, like, man a turret instead of just, like, sitting down on it. You're just going, like, shunk. It's, like, sticking your arms in or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of animating climbing into a seat, it's animating, like, the turret opens up and parts of Prime open up and everything sort of just starts plugging into each other.
That is so wicked. And you know that... Actually, I'm already foreseeing it. I'm already foreseeing the reviews of the War for Cybertron toys lamenting that they can't do that. I can see many Radicons projects already springing up.
Right. And then, like, in a lot of other games, like Gears of War or Halo or whatever, you can remove the gun from the turret and then carry the big heavy weapon around. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, now it has limited ammunition. But one of the details that Matt Teager was really excited about in that regard was when they removed the turret and Optimus was holding it, it was mostly red. And when he dropped it, it turned gray. And then when Bumblebee came over and picked it up, it turned yellow. And he really wanted to make sure that we noticed this detail. I didn't think it really mattered that the gun changed color based on the primary color of whoever was holding it. I didn't really see why that was important.
I'm guessing it was kind of like a nod to Prime turning gray at the end of the 86 movie or something, or like, hey, check it out. When they combine with it, it's like, I don't know, it's so imbued with their spark, it changes color or something like that.
Yeah. And then, like, the weapons that the characters all have, it's similar to the movie where their arm becomes the gun. Like, yeah, they don't hold a gun. They are the gun. But a cool little detail that was pointed out was on Optimus's gun arm, the back, where his elbow would be, the shape of that piece is the shape of the butt of Generation 1 Optimus Prime's rifle.
Ah, nice.
So there's going to be lots of tiny little details like that that fans like us will pick up and notice and go, oh, that tiny thing is relevant. But that a more casual fan or just like a video game player that is just playing a video game and not necessarily a Transformers fan won't think twice about.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I mean, like, those are the kind of things where it's like, I almost feel bad that I don't get really hyped up about it, but it's more like, because I've been in the fandom for so long, seeing things like that more just puts me at ease than gets me excited. But, like, it's still a really positive thing that it's like they're thinking down to nitty-gritty little details like that.
Yeah, and, like, one little funny bit. So one of the scenes, or they show a scene that's kind of, it might be a little spoilery. I won't say exactly what happens right now, but Optimus has a lot of dialogue. And then that scene ends, and it's clearly Peter Cullen. Like, it's obviously Peter Cullen. The scene ends, the other guy that was there, he goes, is that the guy that always does Optimus Prime's voice, or is that a sound alike? And Matt Tiger's like, no, that's Peter Cullen. I'm like, yeah, dumb, that's Peter. I know that's Peter Cullen. Like, where are you? Why are you here?
If the dude who is in the room with Seth ever hears this, please let us know so I can bring you on and interview you, because you're just as interesting to me as a lot of the content of this interview.
Now I'm building a lot of it up, and this guy was perfectly fine. I have no reason to be such a prick about this guy.
He happened to be in the right place at the right time to become the subject of some WTF at TFW japery.
That's, yeah, all. He's my personal unleashed guy.
Well,
no, but he was a perfectly nice gentleman. I'm gonna poke fun at somebody and it's gonna be him. But I don't remember where I was going. But anyway, if you want to know if it was Peter Cullen, it was Peter Cullen.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of some other non-story spoilery stuff that I was curious about or that you might want to bring up.
Frank Welker's not in it.
Yeah.
They tried him out. They were hoping to use him. Frank just can't pull the voice.
Oh, wait, so you mean they tried him out, and then they decided he doesn't really carry the same weight anymore. And
right.
So they did what the Revenge of the Fallen game didn't really do. Like, all absolutely do love to Frank Welker. It's just that it's just the Megatron voice that doesn't work for me anymore from modern Frank Welker. And it always felt to me like the Revenge of the Fallen game kind of even the first movie games kind of shoehorned him into that role a little bit.
Yeah, and the way Matt was telling the story, they wanted to be able to use Frank Welker. Like, they have just as much respect and reverence for Frank as they do for Peter Cullen. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to work out.
Well, the thing about Frank's Megatron nowadays, you know, entirely from the video games, is that, like, he'll hit a line so well every now and then. But for every line that he hits just perfectly, he has, like, three where it is, like, the power is just, like, five points too low for me to really believe it's Megatron. And it's, like, I feel bad saying it. And I'm sure that, you know, given Matt Teager's enthusiasm, I'm sure he was pretty down that they couldn't make it work out. But I do kind of respect them for, you know, saying we tried it and it didn't work for us and we decided to go another direction.
Right. Yeah, because Matt looks to be about my age. He was just the right age group from when Transformers came out. He was all about Transformers as a kid. He has all the G1 episodes on DVD and makes his kids watch them. well, I don't want to say makes, but he watches them with his kids. He has history with this stuff, and he has a respect for it that maybe other game companies that have made Transformer games in the past didn't necessarily have.
Mm-hmm.
Matt is concerned with producing a good game, and that energy, that desire really came through when I was talking to him. And it's hard not to also be excited for the game after talking to the guy, because
yeah,
I want to trust him.
Well, I really appreciate his notion. He actually said it in that audio clip, and I always appreciate when he says it, is that he's not trying to make a good Transformers game. He's trying to make a good game that's about Transformers. And that's what sets him apart from a lot of the dudes who would speak about the movie games. And as much as I really loved the effort the Revenge of the Fallen team put into it, but they did kind of fall into that trap of going, like, don't worry, guys, it'll be better than the first one. And it was kind of like, a lot of things can be better than the first one. That doesn't necessarily mean they're still going to be dead solid. And I mean, like, the Revenge of the Fallen game on the major consoles was a fairly solid little playthrough, and I had fun with it, but it had its flaws here and there, and it sounds like a lot of the kind of feeling of a shell that it had is not there in this one. Like I said, this one looks like it has a real solid core inside of it.
Yeah, and I'm not a super fan of the third-person run-and-gun style shooter, which is what this is, and, like, we kind of talked about it at the thing where they didn't want to do a Gears of War style third-person of run over to cover, hunker down, kind of hold that spot until it's safe to move up. They wanted it to be more action, more go, go, go. And, like, I get the appeal of that. I get why they would want to do that. It's not personally my favorite style of gameplay, but as long as they do it well, as long as the gameplay is at least as good as the Revenge of the Fallen game, with far more polished graphics and a far more finished feel to it, then it's going to be a better game. Hopefully it's more than just that, but
well, it sounds like it adds a layer that Revenge of the Fallen was missing, which was, in Revenge of the Fallen, your alt mode was more of a speed boost or a melee boost, whereas in this game, the alt mode is not only is it, you know, a full-on alt mode where you don't have to hold a button down the whole time, which I honestly didn't mind given how the alt modes in Revenge of the Fallen were only really speed boosts. But in this game, it's like, not only is the alt mode a toggle, but the alt mode has its own weapons. You know, the cars have two different mobile functions with the hovering of the tires down. Like, there, it has that extra layer of you aren't just a robot, and what you turn into is more than just a temporary little boost to your energy kind of thing. And that's where my confidence is getting pushed up a little bit, is that they're getting the two-form style in a gameplay sense.
Yeah, and my first gameplay-related question was, how do you handle transforming with the control pad? Are you holding that trigger down like the last game, or is it a toggle? Boop, ba-doop, ba-doop. Robot, vehicle. And then, oh, it's a toggle. It's a one-button press. I'm like, thank you. You are already a better game, in my opinion.
You've already succeeded. What did the other guy in the room say? Did he say he wished it was holding the button down?
Or? He didn't say anything. He was daydreaming about something. I don't know.
I was at Street Fighter 4.
I wish I was seeing Halo Reach instead. I drew the short straw and they made me come here.
I'm gonna get there late.
Yeah, so dumb.
I have a press pass, I could do that.
I'm mad about what Activision did to Infinity War, so I'm gonna teach them a lesson.
Oh, he totally should have just brought that up out of nowhere in the middle of your time with that tier. Like, so what is your opinion on Infinity War?
Or not asked to, like, turn around to the PR guys and be like, hey, what the hell was up with that?
Bouncers?
What happened there?
Bouncers?
What was all that about? You know, those guys made you like $1 billion. What was up with that? You paid $5 million to buy them. They made you $1 billion.
And you fired them. For what? For insulting you publicly? Well,
a lot. Like, every day.
I think that's more or less all the gameplay stuff I can think of. Do you want to move into the more storyline spoilery bits?
Okay.
All right, so if you don't want to know anything about the storyline, if you're staying clean of storyline spoilers for this game, and I know there are some of you out there who are, you should stop listening right now, because there's an anecdote that Seth shared at the beginning of the show that I really want him to share now, which was the one about Jetfire and Starscream. And Matt's, again, limitless enthusiasm.
So where are we going?
Oh, no, I'm not playing the spoiler guy. He's still on vacation.
Yeah, screw that guy anyway.
So yeah, the whole bit about, what was it? It's a mission, it opens with Starscream and Jetfire, and they're still friends, and who was with them?
Yeah, so, in the early part of the game, like, the Jets, I guess, haven't picked sides yet. Starscream and Jetfire are bros, which, you know, harkens into the way we saw Jetfire introduced in the cartoon, where him and Starscream were friends, and then, you know, things happened. But in this game, Jetfire doesn't become an Autobot after they unfreeze him and he has a change of heart. There's a moment where it's time to pick sides. Like, it's Civil War, man, you gotta pick a side. And Starscream is drawn toward what Megatron has going on, and Jetfire thinks, you know, the Autobots are the way to go. And when Matt was sort of describing this scene, he's like, so Starscream and Jetfire have to choose, and there's some other characters there. And he's like, and now I'm going to reveal it, and you're going to be excited. Like, that was kind of the energy we were getting. He's on, there were some other robots there. Jetfire and Skywarp. Pause for applause.
Thundercracker. Thundercracker and Skywarp.
What did I say? Jetfire and Skywarp?
Jetfire and Skywarp.
Oh, man, I blew it.
He said Jetfire and Skywarp. He looks, wasn't Jetfire already there? He's like, no, I blew it! Just throws himself out the window.
We were on the 16th floor. That would have been dangerous. No, but anyway, so he's like, Skywarp and Thundercracker, pause for applause. And we were like, oh, cool. That makes sense, because those guys are always hanging around on Starscream. And then I kind of felt bad that we weren't more excited, because clearly Matt was.
He was waiting for that pop of, like, I remember those guys. They yeah, look so just kinda, like Starscream.
Yeah. I mean, so it's cool that they're going to kind of play that thing out with these two guys. They used to be friends, and now they're on opposing armies.
Mm-hmm.
Then another little bit that we saw was actually the first thing that they showed us was a cutscene where it's the very first time Optimus and Bumblebee meet.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know each other before, and like this is the big meeting of Optimus and Bumblebee. And it looks like one of the sub stories is going to be how that bond happens and how Bumblebee becomes this guy that is always someone Prime can rely on. Mm-hmm. And he's not Prime yet, he's just Optimus. Zeta Prime is the leader of the Autobots at the beginning of the game. And then I asked, did you ever consider kind of setting the character farther back and starting the game with him being Orion Pax instead of just Optimus without the Prime? And Matt Tigger said that that is something that they considered, and it's something that they looked into doing. Mm-hmm. But they didn't want, in the end, they didn't want to make the character too different. They still wanted him to be recognizable. They still wanted, like, the more casual fan to know immediately who they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And not try to, like, who the hell is this guy I've never heard of? And then later, oh, that's Optimus Prime. I wish I knew that before.
That leads me to a question. I know you actually don't have the answer for this, but just to bring it up. if we're going to have Optimus as, like, just a soldier in the army, still voiced by, like, modern, booming, you know, gritty Peter Cullen, I'm wondering who they're going to have as the voice for Zeta Prime to be, like, the voice that could command Peter Cullen around.
Gilbert Godfrey.
Yes.
I'm just speculating. I don't have any inside information.
No, it started. All right, everyone, go on IMDb. Give Gilbert Godfrey the credit. Go to the wiki. Fill it in.
Yeah, well, so this cutscene with Bumblebee, and this is more spoilery. My understanding was it was right at the beginning of the Autobot campaign.
Hmm.
Optimus was with Ratchet, so maybe this is like the second mission in the Autobot campaign, and now you have your core gang, Optimus, Ratchet, and Bumblebee. And word is just spreading through the Autobot ranks that Zeta Prime has been killed. And nobody knows what to do because the leader is gone. So my assumption is that's going to be the last boss battle of the Decepticon campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Is you'll kill Zeta Prime. That's speculation, but it seems pretty obvious based on what was seen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, I'd assume the final boss, sort of the Decepticon thing would either be Zeta Prime or Omega Supreme, just to have it be, like, the biggest bang, or the penultimate biggest bang.
And then got to see Jetfire a couple times. First time we see Jetfire, Optimus, Ratchet, and Bumblebee have arrived at an Autobot headquarters or a base of some sort, and Jetfire is a hologram. And then, after the scene that they showed with the turrets, Jetfire kind of comes in, and he's in robot mode, but he's, like, hovering up off the ground, and him and Optimus talk for a minute, and then Jetfire transforms and flies away. And the jet mode is really cool looking. It's similar to the way they did his jet mode in the cartoon, the G1 cartoon. Mm-hmm. But more futuristic, high-tech, modern design. But enough of those shapes that he's recognizable.
Cool. And
like when he transformed, I went, oh, that's basically the same shape, just kind of cooler.
I was wondering, what did you think of some of the voices you heard for characters that, you know, outside of Cullen and Soundwave, for instance, or Megatron, like for Jetfire or Bumblebee, if you heard any voice clips from them, was it pretty believable? Was it a decent performance?
Jetfire was okay. It didn't stand out as anything great or bad. It was an appropriate sounding voice. I thought Bumblebee was a little off sounding. I'm not really sure how to put my finger on it. Just the voice wasn't quite what I was expecting, maybe. But I wasn't like, no, what?
Call in Dan Gilvezan, stat!
What have you guys done?
That sounds kind of like
Jetfire. I used to love Bumblebee.
I hate Bumblebee now.
Bumblebee.
Would you say Jetfire was kind of like Caden and Bumblebee was kind of like male Shepard in a way? Because that's how it's striking me. Because Caden is like, I'm referring to Mass Effect because that's really fresh on my mind because I was playing it for 8 hours yesterday. Caden's voice is nothing remarkable to me, but it works for how he looks. And male Shepard has a really strange voice that sounds perfectly fine, but still sounds completely off to me for some reason.
I don't know if I would set him up like that, but hey, Ratchet. I heard a little bit of Ratchet talking.
How was he?
I only heard like one line of dialogue out of Ratchet, so I don't know for sure, and I didn't think to look it up to make sure I heard right, but I think it might be the same voice as Ratchet in the movie.
Oh, the dude, I can't remember his name. I know what you mean.
If it's not the same guy, it's very similar.
So it's a very movie-esque Ratchet voice.
Right. Although he looks nothing like movie Ratchet.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember if it's in the interview with Matt, but like one of the things he was telling us as they were designing the characters was one of the ways he would test to make sure that they hadn't changed too much and that they would still be recognizable is he would take the concept art home and hold them up to his kids. Like he would hold up the Bumblebee and go, who's this? And they go, Bumblebee. Okay. Who's this?
Oh yeah.
Soundwave. Okay. And like that was the way he would test to make sure that you could still recognize the characters and they didn't change them too dramatically.
Yeah, I recall that from your written bit. I thought that was a great test because that's kind of like that's going right down to the core of it. Is like anyone who isn't a Transformers fan or anyone's a little kid who just likes toys, are they going to look at this and actually know what they're looking at? And the whole thing about, especially with Jetfire's alt mode, about the shapes being there, that's been the big aesthetic thing I've seen for this, is that they're very particular about maintaining certain shapes or aspects that bring up sense memory where you're like, hey, I remember that box on the leg, that's Blitzwing or whatever, you know, like the butt on Prime's gun or the shapes on Jetfire's vehicle mode. Like they have a really good eye for having like the key aesthetic components kind of thing to get very artsy about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and Matt also talked about how nervous he was in the first meeting with Hasbro, and Aaron Archer is there and they're pitching the idea to Hasbro for approval, and he's sliding the concept art for Bumblebee across the table to Archer, and it's like this moment of like, this is where this whole thing lives or dies based on this drawing of Bumblebee, and man, I hope they like it. And then as he told it, they were like, looks great. Let's go. And then some months later, I think he said 6 or 8 months later, or after development, like they had been working on the game for a while. They had another meeting with Aaron Archer and all them. And they're like, surprise, up over the edge of the table, sliding across to them is the first gray prototype one of the toys based on the designs they were using for the games, and him just being like, we're on the right track. We did it. Like, clearly we're doing something right.
That's the Aaron Archer way. I remember back when at that BotCon when he was like, yeah, I bet you guys want to see Masterpiece Optimus Prime, picks it up from under the table. Hey, check it out. He's like, hey, what's up, game developers? Want to see something cool? Picks it up from under the table. I keep a lot of things down here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could just imagine that must have been a huge moment in that guy's career.
Given how enthusiastic he is about the project, you know, in that audio clip, it's like, I can only imagine he must have just, like, gone like, oh, like, this is so cool.
Yeah, like, just imagine you got a chance to work on something from your childhood. Mm-hmm. And this is something you care about. This is your job, and you're trying to do good. And the people in charge of that thing have now validated what you're doing by investing so much of the franchise, like the time and the money to create these toys, to market them, to put them out on shelves, to have them manufactured, to make toys based on these designs of yours. Must be just a gigantic vote of confidence. Like, yeah. how do you not think that you're going to win?
That's why it reminds me of, like, I remember back the first BotCon Derek Wyatt was at, and someone asked him, like, you know, how does it feel to, you know, have toys being made of pictures you draw for something that you love? And he was like, it's pretty awesome. In the case of these guys, it's not even like they were contracted in for something that would result in toys. It's like they went to them. And then, you know, cut to a year later, now there's like three toys coming out based on the thing that they brought to Hasbro themselves.
Yeah, and like, as you mentioned with Wyatt, just at the 09 BotCon, when they unveiled the pictures of the movie-style lockdown, Derek hadn't seen that mm-hmm. yet, and he wasn't at the thing, and he didn't see it then either. But like, Derek was asking GogDog and I don't remember if you were there, like, did you guys see the lockdown? It's like, yeah, did you know about it? He's like, well, I kind of knew they were doing it, but I hadn't seen it. If I remember right, that's how he put it.
Yeah. So,
but then he asked, like, does it look cool? And and I didn't know what his expectation was or what he thought about it at all. And I'm like, oh, now, is he, like, honored that they've done this? Or is he like, oh, they took my design, they changed it? And that's kind of an insult. I'm like, yeah, it looks
all right.
Do you want it to look cool?
Like, dude, it looks great. He's like, God damn it.
I'll go kill them. No, but then Wyatt's like, starts talking about how it's this huge honor that something he created, this basically original character, is now being taken into other, facets of the franchise and becoming a regular character and he was super happy. And then I was like, oh yeah, it looks awesome. I didn't want to say it looked awesome in case you didn't want it to look awesome. But, and so like, I saw a similar kind of joy coming out of Matt Teager. And I was like, hey, I know that look. that's a good look.
You should go talk to this guy on Twitter called @ Derek J. Wyatt.
Yeah. Derek Wyatt, you could hang out together and play with your toys.
That's just also what's so interesting to me is now this is like, what, now two generations of dudes who love Transformers getting to work in Transformers and then getting toys made of the stuff they made for something they liked before they even worked in it. So it's like... Yeah. I find it all very inspiring for any fan out there who has an artistic or engineering or even, you know, just design sensibility, that it's now been twice proven that people who are, you know, current fans who get work in the franchise, you know, get this lovely moment of like, this is you contributing to your own hobby, basically. And it's really cool to me, that whole aspect of it.
Right. Yeah, and it's just when you get someone that cares working on a project, like someone that grew up with the thing, finally getting to do it.
Yeah.
They're always, even if they fall short, they're always going to try harder than someone that's just doing a job.
Exactly.
Like, our studio got hired to do this, so pop, 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 there's your little robot game.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think a lot of people working in games now, if they were told, hey, your studio's been given the Transformers game, there's going to be a bunch of the guys in the office who get really jazzed up. But there's something different about this one in that, you know, these guys went to Hasbro. So there's just this whole extra level of it. And it still astounds me that this was instigated by the developers and not by Hasbro themselves.
Well, I asked about that, and that's not quite how it went down. Activision was, like, part of their contract with Hasbro was to produce a game that wasn't based on the movies.
Yeah.
But when Full Moon was approached to be the studio to do that for Activision, they made a big effort to make sure that they were the ones that got to do it.
Okay, so it was like they weren't just handed the contract, but they were on a short list kind of thing.
Right. And they had done the game based on the Jason Bourne series
mm-hmm.
that came out a couple years ago. So, like, one of the reasons why they were being looked at is because they had experience working with somebody else's IP.
Yeah.
But clearly when the offer was made, they were like, yes, a lot. But it doesn't sound like Hasbro had requested a specific type of game.
Yeah, so the meat of this is very much directly from these developers.
Right. It was make a Transformer game that's not based on the movies, and what the setting, the time period, the character designs, that was Full Moon's creation that they then presented to Hasbro for approval.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it is kind of the story of they went to Hasbro with the idea, but it wasn't. They
didn't go.
They approached Hasbro to get the job, kind of a thing.
Yeah, they didn't go to them unsolicited, really.
Right. Right.
It's still pretty cool, though. It's just, all I got to say is Matt Teager, please don't insult Activision as dumb as they are, because we don't need you to get Infinity Warded right now. You're a cool guy, and you probably can't comment on that remark whatsoever. So
he's like, why are you trying to drag me into this mess? Like,
the moment this goes live, two bouncers show up outside his house going like, we just want to make sure the Infinity Ward guys don't come here to talk to you.
That was nice to that bastard. I'm gonna burn San Francisco to the ground.
I guess that's about the gist of the stuff to chat up about for this supplemental, unless there's anything else you wanted to add.
I can't. I'll probably think of like five things as soon as we're done recording, but
if you do, just write them down and we'll bring them up in 87.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like I'm never going to be able to talk about this again. I know that we are going to be using that interview section on the podcast I do with Defuzz, Gamepads Unplugged, mm-hmm. and I'll be talking with Dan about it, and he may bring up some other questions. So if you guys listening, you really want to hear some more about this, do check us out at gamepadsunplugged.com, and we're on iTunes, and episode 4 is when we're planning on doing this, which should be going up pretty soon, within a few days of when you're listening to this now.
Yeah. And also, another reason to check out the Gamepads Unplugged coverage is you get to hear Dan talk about it. And Dan is one of the longtime TFWers, so it will be very, very Transformer-centric when they discuss it. So it's highly worth tuning into, in my opinion.
My opinion, too.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also that classy Seth fellow is on that podcast, too. So
yeah, he is. He's so suave.
So I guess that's the supplemental for now. Hope you enjoyed it. And that's me and Seth talking about video games. Now I've got to record episode 86 and then try to do some homework and not play another 8 hours of Mass Effect, because I just got to deal with what, Novaria. I did Vermeier before, like, two other places, and I feel really dumb about it now because of what happens at Vermeier. I should have saved that for the end.
Probably. That's why you played a second time.
I already have like five other playthroughs in, running through my head now that I've seen all the different ways things can go. It's a disgustingly lovely game. But anyway, that's me. That's Seth. Tune in again sometime, because we here at WTF at TFW, we like you guys, and we won't Infinity Ward you. So feel free to speak your mind. Just ignore the bouncers when they show up. All right, I'm going to push stop on that one. Yeah.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.